Slip. 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 Slip, Bill.
Oh, Claw. 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 Claudius.
Oh, Sibyl, I have come to question you about Rome's fate and mine. Speak.
Ten years, 50 days, and 3. Claw, claw, claw shall given be a gift that all desire but he. To a fawning fellowship he shall stammer, cluck, and trip, dribbling always with his lip. But when he's dumb and no more here, 1900 years or near, claw, claw, Claudius shall speak clear.
Three-part serial based on the novels I, Claudius, and Claudius the God by Robert Graves. In a radio version by Eric Ewens, adapted by Glyn Dearman. With Timothy West as Claudius. Episode 1, I, Claudius.
Claudius, or to give you my full name, Tiberius Claudius Drusus Nero Germanicus, this, that, and the other, for I shall not trouble you with my titles, was known, and not so long ago either, as Claudius the Idiot, or That Claudius, or Claudius the Stammerer, or Claw Claw Claudius, or at best as poor Uncle Claudius. Well, I, Claudius, am about to tell the strange history of my life. Why do I not stammer, you may ask? Well, my old tutor, Asenodorus, made me declaim with my mouth full of pebbles. In trying to overcome the obstruction of the pebbles, I forgot about my stammer, and then the pebbles were removed one at a time until none remained. Then I could speak as well as anyone, but only in formal speech. In ordinary conversation, I still stammer if I am embarrassed or upset. Another of my tutors was the historian Livy, and it was due to him that the writing of history was my sole profession and interest for more than 35 years. It was after I consulted the Sibyl at Cumae that I decided to address myself to posterity. As a practiced diviner, this is how I interpreted her verses. Some 1900 years hence, I will be heard speaking clear when my words are found. Livy it was then who first aroused my interest in history, and I think that even before I get myself born, I will tell you about a conversation between him and the last of the Romans, the historian Pollio, to which I contributed when I was still in my teens and reading one day in the Apollo library.
Well, Claudius, my friend, how goes it? Studying, I see. Yes, sir.
Do you know the famous Licinius Pollio?
Yes, sir, but only by name.
What's that you're reading, boy? Trash, I'll be bound, by the shamefaced way you hide it.
I should not like to hear this book called Trash.
Well, what is it? Clever boy. My history of the Civil Wars.
And if I may venture to praise it, a very fine book indeed, sir.
Well, young man, you seem to be a lad of sense. Have you read our friend Libby's work?
Indeed, yes, sir.
Well, I appeal to you. Isn't that at least trashier writing than mine?
It's certainly easier to read, sir.
Easier? How's that?
He makes the people of ancient Rome behave and talk as if they were alive now.
He has you there, Livy, on your weakest spot. You credit the Romans of 7 centuries ago with modern motives and habits of speech. Oh, it's readable, all right. But it's not history.
Claudius, my friend, you have ambitions to write history. Which of us two old worthies would you choose as a model?
It's very difficult.
Answer. The truth will offend neither of us.
No.
Well, then, I think I would choose you, Pollio. I am sure I can never hope to attain Livy's inspired literary elegance. I shall do my best to imitate your accuracy and diligence.
This talk is idle. I must be off. You're welcome to your disciple, Pollio.
We've upset Livy, boy. Claudius is your name, isn't it? You obviously come from a good family.
I am Tiberius Claudius Drusus Nero Germanicus.
My God. But you're supposed to be a half-wit.
Yes, sir. My family is ashamed of me because I stammer and am lame and usually ill, so I go about very little in society.
Tell me, why were you reading my history?
I'm getting material together to write a life of my father.
Ah, I see. You are the first youthful historian I have ever met. History is an old man's game. But then, not many of your family reach old age.
No, sir.
Claudius, I am an old man. Though I look brisk, I have reached the end. In 3 days I shall be dead, I know it. Just before one dies, there comes a strange lucidity. One speaks prophetically. Now listen. Do you want to live a long, busy life with honor at the end of it?
Yes, sir.
Then exaggerate your limp, stammer deliberately, sham sickness frequently, let your wits wander, jerk your head, and twitch with your hands on all public or semi-public occasions. You come from a strange and dangerous family. This is your only hope of safety, boy. Remember what I told you.
Yes, sir. I'll remember.
Now perhaps you'll understand why I began with the conversation in the Apollo Library. Those are the standards by which I'll tell my life story, and what I did not see with my own eyes, I have heard from those that did. If you can hear from eyes. But it's time I got myself born. This occurred prematurely at 7 months in Lyon, in France, in the year before my father died on the campaign. My parents had 6 children before me, but only my brother Germanicus and my sister Lavilla survived the campaigning. Had not my father's death brought the family back to Rome, it is unlikely that I would have survived, for I was a sickly child, a very battlefield of diseases, the doctor said, and perhaps I'm only here because the diseases could not agree which one should have the honor of carrying me off. I had malaria and measles, which left me slightly deaf in one ear, and erysipelas and colitis, and finally infantile paralysis, which shortened my left leg so that I was condemned to a permanent limp. My father, I say, died while I was an infant, and we came back to Rome to live in a big house on the Palatine Hill, close to Augustus's palace and close to the Temple of Apollo, where the library was. My mother, the daughter of Mark Antony, did not love me, preferring my brother Germanicus. He was her favorite, as he was everybody's favorite, but so far from envying him for the love and admiration that he won wherever he went, I rejoiced on his behalf. Germanicus pitied me and did what he could to make my life happier. My grandmother, Livia, had as little time for me as my mother, but unfortunately she is the chief character in the first part of my story. Augustus was her second husband, following her divorce from my grandfather. After my father's death, she became the virtual head of our family. Augustus ruled the world, but Livia ruled Augustus, using him as an instrument of her ambition. The question of the succession to the imperial throne dominated all our lives and deaths. My granduncle Augustus had been on the throne for, what else can I call it, for 20 years when I was born, and the succession had never been clearly determined. During my childhood, I was only happy as I read in the library or tried to play with other children in the gardens of Sallust. In my youth, children were betrothed very young, and one summer's day, I met a little girl who told me her name was Mediolina Camilla. We used to meet in the garden nearly every day and sit in the shade and read.
Oh, you are the kindest boy I've ever met, Claudius. Much nicer than my brother's friends.
I like you too. I could marry you.
Would you like us to become betrothed? Would your father approve?
My father is dead. Everything would depend on Livia and Augustus.
Oh, dear.
She dislikes me so much that I don't think she cares what I do.
My grandfather would never stand in our way. He will do anything for me. In any case, I'm sure he'll like you.
And this proved to be the case. Augustus and Mediolinus approved the match, and Livia accepted their decision, merely pointing out to Augustus that the dowry was small and the honor of the alliance great for the House of Camillus.
I can hardly believe it.
It's true. Augustus sent for me and told me himself.
And Livia?
She insists that the betrothal ceremony be as private as possible, as I would make a fool of myself in front of a crowd.
Claudius, don't shake so much.
No, Grandma.
Blow your nose and wipe your mouth.
Yes, Grandma. Thank you.
We are late, Augustus.
They'll be here soon, Livia. Mediolinus is one of my finest generals, always on time.
That's typical. An untrustworthy family. They've bred no one of outstanding ability for generations, so stand still.
Claudius.
Yes, Grandma.
Here comes Mediolinus at last.
Where's Camilla?
My friends are calamity.
Well, come on, Mediolina, speak up.
My granddaughter is dead.
Oh, Camilla!
Stop slumbering, Claudius.
Well, we had a message half an hour ago that she was already on her way. I mean, what joke is this?
Oh, no joke, alas.
But how did she die?
A crowd gathered at the door, as crowds will, when they hear the daughter of the house is about to go to her betrothal.
Yes. When we came out,
the women all pressed around her. Yes. And as she stepped into her sedan, she gave a little cry, as if someone had trodden on her foot. So we'd not gone the length of the street before she began to lose colour. And then she said, "Oh, grandfather, that woman stuck a needle into my arm." Those were her last words. She died a few minutes later, poisoned.
Oh, no.
Oh, take the boy to his room, someone. That friend of his, Posthumus, will look after him. I knew he'd disgrace her.
It hurts me even now to think of that day. Never, I swear, was there such a beautiful girl as Camilla.
I stayed for days in my room in a nervous fever, unable to eat or sleep. A posthumous did look after me, or I might have died. Eventually, I was betrothed to a girl I'd never seen, the granddaughter of one of Livia's closest women friends. In my life, I have had many cruel jokes played on me, but I think this was the cruelest. Ergulanilla was a young female Hercules. 15 years old, she was over 6'3" in height and still growing. She had the largest feet and hands that I've ever seen on any human being in my life. It would be untrue to say that my marriage turned out an unhappy one. There was not enough strain between us to justify the term. We slept together at first because that seemed expected of us, and Ergulanilla became pregnant 3 months after our marriage and eventually bore me a son called Drusillus, for whom I found it impossible to have any fatherly feeling. The year before I came of age and married had been a bad year for Rome. There was a series of earthquakes in the south of Italy. Little rain fell in the spring, and then just before harvest time there were torrential storms which spoiled what little corn had come to ear. A famine seemed threatening, and Augustus sent commissioners to Egypt and other places to buy huge quantities of corn, but the price was high, and there was not really enough. As usual, famine brought rioting, and rioting brought arson. Enormous damage was done. A new tax was imposed about this time to provide money for the wars we were waging in Germany, and what with the famine, the fires, and the taxes, the common people began to get restless and openly discussed revolution. It was decided to put everyone in a good humor by exhibiting a public sword fight and wild beast hunt in the names of Germanicus and myself in memory of our father. Livia hoped that reminding Rome of his great exploits would call attention to his son, Germanicus, who would soon, it was expected, be sent to Germany to help his uncle Tiberius win fresh conquests there. In the procession to the amphitheatre, Germanicus and I rode by special decree of the Senate in our father's old war chariot. We went down the Appian Way and under our father's memorial arch. It was the first sword fight I had been permitted to attend, and to find myself in the president's box was all the more embarrassing for me on this account. Germanicus did all the work, though pretending to consult me when the decision had to be made, and carried it through with the greatest assurance and dignity. Livia had spared no expense in hiring the best performers in Rome to fight it out. In the first 6 combats, one man was killed, one so severely wounded that he died the same day, and the third had his shield arm lopped off close to the shoulder, which caused roars of laughter. The 7th combat was between a man armed with a regulation army sword and an old-fashioned brass-bound shield, and a man armed with a 3-pronged trout spear and a forked net. The sword man was a soldier of the guard who had been condemned to death for getting drunk and striking his captain. His sentence had been commuted to a fight against his net and trident man, a professional confessor. My sympathies were with the soldier, who came into the arena looking very white and shaky. The Sicilian came swaggering close behind. Livia had paid him 1,000 gold pieces for the afternoon and promised 500 more if he killed his man in a good fight. They came together in front of the box and saluted first Augustus and Livia, and then Germanicus and me as joint presidents.
Greetings, sir! We salute you in death's shadow!
Why, that soldier's one of my father's veterans. I know the man well.
Excellent, Germanicus. It should be a good fight, then. Although the net man must be 10 years younger, and years count in this game.
Yes, yes. Get on with it. Sound the trumpets!
And so the fight began. The soldier stood his ground while the Sicilian danced around him, trying to make him lose his temper by taunting him.
What are you, little soldier?
But the soldier was not to be gone. Only once, when the Sicilian came within lunging distance, did he show any readiness to take the offensive, and the quickness of his thrust drew a roar from the crowd. But the Sicilian was away in time. Soon the fight grew more lively. The Sicilian made stabs high and low with his long trident.
Beautiful work! Oh, the best net man in Rome. Did you see that? He could have entangled him and got his stroke in then if he wished. Ah, oh, but he's playing with the soldier.
Yes, I'm afraid the man is done for. He should have kept off drink.
Oh, that's enough. He's just playing about. Oh, he should finish him now.
The Sicilian needed no prompting. He made a simultaneous sweep of his net round the soldier's head and a stab at his belly with the trident. And then what a roar went up. The soldier had caught the net in his right hand and, flinging his body back, kicked with all his strength at the shaft of the trident, a foot or two from his enemy's hand. The weapon flew away. The Sicilian stood astonished for a moment, then dashed past the soldier to recover his trident. The soldier threw himself forward and sideways and caught him in the ribs as he ran with the spiked boss of his shield. The Sicilian fell, gasping on all fours. The soldier recovered himself quickly and with a sharp downward swing of the shield caught him on the back of his head.
The rabbit claw!
Oh, I've never seen that done in an arena before.
Have you, Olivia? Killed him too, I swear.
Yes, and served him right. That's what comes of underrating one's opponent. Still, it has saved me 500 gold pieces.
To crown the afternoon's enjoyment, there was a fight between two German hostages who voluntarily engaged with each other in a death duel. It was not pretty fighting, savage hacking with long sword and halberd, but it was a far grander fight than any that the professionals had shown. One German swinging with his great sword, the other parrying with his shield while trying to get under his opponent's guard. The crowd was perfectly silent, as if it were a religious performance. Then one of the combatants slipped in a blood pool. The other straddled over him with a triumphant smile. And then there was a roaring in my ears, and I fainted away. The emotion of seeing men killed for the first time in my life, and then the combat between the soldier and the Sicilian, in which I felt so strongly for the soldier, and now this bloody fight, it was too much for me. They propped me up again in my place until the show had formally ended. To have been carried out would have been a disgrace for everyone. The next day the games continued, but I was not there. It was announced that I was ill. That evening, Livia wrote to Augustus.
They habitually communicated with each other in this way before coming to any decisions on important family and state matters.
My dear Augustus, Claudius' unmanly behavior yesterday in fainting at the sight of two men fighting, to say nothing of the grotesque twitching of his hands and head, which at a solemn festival in commemoration of his father's victories were all the more shameful and unfortunate, has at least had this advantage, that we can now decide once and for all that except him the dignity of priest, for the vacancies in the colleges must be filled somehow, and he can be well coached in his duties, Claudius is perfectly unfit to appear in public. We must be content to write him off as a loss, except perhaps for breeding purposes, for I hear he has now done his duty by Ergula Nilla. But I shan't be sure of that until I see the child, which may well turn out to be a monster like him.
I was well away from the imperial throne. Augustus had adopted Tiberius and Postumus as his sons, and made Tiberius adopt my brother Germanicus in turn, giving him precedence over his own son, Castor. Tiberius was usually away fighting wars or quelling rebellions, and tended more and more to send for Germanicus to help him. I remained in my library. Postumus, poor fool, was in love with my sister Livilla, a beautiful girl, but cruel and ambitious. She preferred Castor and married him. Postumus gradually became more and more isolated, both in public and in private life. On the evening when Germanicus was given the command in Germany that many people had expected would go to Postumus, I was working late in my room on the upper story of our house when I heard a scuffling noise from the balcony.
What? What's that? Who is it? Who's that?
It's all right. It's Postumus.
Oh, what a fright you gave me. I thought you were an assassin sent by Livia. What's the matter?
I've come to say goodbye, Claudius.
Climbing in like a burglar? I don't understand. As Augustus changed his mind, I thought he'd chosen Germanicus to go for the
war. I'm not going to the wars, far from it. I'm going to some small island.
Oh, no.
Yes, I'm being banished.
But why? What crime have you committed?
Listen carefully, Claudius. I want you to know the truth and not listen to the charge they've trumped up against me. Above all, I want you to tell Germanicus everything.
Yes, I promise I will. Go on.
You know that I've been out of favor with Augustus lately.
Yes.
I couldn't make out why at first, but soon it was obvious that Livia has been poisoning his mind against me. And she was not the only one. Your sister Livilla was in it, too.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, but I did try
to... Yes, you warned me about it, and I didn't speak to you for days. But you know how it is when one is in love with someone.
Yes, I know.
There was another reason I didn't believe you. Just before she married Castor, she told me that Livia had forced the marriage on her, and that really she loved only me. Well, this afternoon she reminded me of that conversation, forced out a tear or two, and said she wished she were dead.
Oh, that's an old trick of hers. She can cry real tears whenever it suits her. Oh, Postumus, if only I'd told you all I knew about her, you would have hated me, but it would have saved you all this. So what happened?
Well, this evening she sent me a message to say that Castor would be out all night, and that I was to come to her just before midnight.
Huh?
I found her waiting for me in her dressing gown, with her hair down, and looking beautiful.
Oh, yes, she can.
She flung her arms around me, and I picked her up and carried her over to the bed. She responded at first, and then began to shout and pummel me. I thought she was as excited as I was. But then she began to scream, "Rape! Rape!" And the door was battered down, and in came the palace guard. Guess who was at their head?
Castor?
Livia.
Oh.
She had us brought into Augustus's presence. Castor was with him. While Livia was telling her story, that whore Livilla was sobbing and hiding her face. Her dressing gown was ripped across. She must have done it herself, deliberately. Augustus called me a beast and a satyr. I tried to explain things, but Livilla shouted me down.
And Augustus believed her?
Yes. He thundered abuse at me and said I am to be banished for life to the most desolate island in his dominions.
What could you say?
I told him that in name he was emperor of the Romans, but that in fact he was less free than the slave girl of a drunken whoremaster, and that one day his eyes would be opened to the unnatural crimes of his abominable wife.
Posthumous, that was dangerous.
I said my love and loyalty to him remained unchanged. I don't want to compromise you, dear Claudius. I must not be found in your room. Give me a sword, and I'll go out and fight them. The better to die than to rot away in some small island.
Possibly, be patient. Yield now, and your chance will come later. When German Manicus knows the truth, he'll not rest until you're free again, I promise you.
He can't explain away all the lying evidence against me.
The opportunity will come, I say. Livia is bound to make a slip soon. She wouldn't be human if she didn't.
I don't believe she is human.
Don't despair. Posthumus, everything will be all right in the end. I'm not afraid of Livia. You must go now. The end of the next corridor. Quick, the window. Quick.
Goodbye, Claudius. I'll wait to hear from you.
Goodbye, my friend. But don't worry. I'll tell you, Manicus, everything that you told me.
But I was not able to keep my promise immediately. That night I was taken ill again. So ill that they talked of me as dead. By the time I began to recover, Germanicus was already at the walls, and Posthumus had been banished for life. Tiberius was now Augustus's sole heir, with Germanicus and Castor to carry on the line after him. Livia's line.
But why didn't you write to me about Posthumus while I was in Germany?
Because I feared my letters would be intercepted. Livia has a very highly organized spy system.
You're obsessed with our grandmother.
Germanicus, because of your own noble nature, you refuse to think evil of any person until you have positive proof. You credit everybody with the highest motives. That makes you an excellent general. You bring out the best in your soldiers. But here at home it's different.
What are you talking about?
Augustus is now over 70.
Yes.
Our uncle Tiberius is next in line, but he is 56. Where are Marcellus, Agrippa, Agrippa's sons, Gaius and Lucius? Where is their younger brother, Posthumus, on some rock in the Mediterranean?
Claudius, I am a simple soldier. Explain to me plainly what you mean.
Very well. When Augustus was victorious in the civil wars, he still believed in the Republic. But now, after 40 years' rule, he's forgotten about the Republic, as has all most everybody else. He feels he's earned the right to appoint his imperial successors, even to the third generation, if it pleases him. He is satisfied that you are the natural successor of Tiberius, and that your sons, Nero and Drusus, will succeed you. I will be bypassed. The gods be praised. Posthumus, as the surviving son of Agrippa, could have upset the balance.
So?
Listen to the facts and judge for yourself. Livia has ruled through Augustus as she intends to rule through Tiberius, who has benefited from all these comings and goings, mostly goings. Livia and Livia's line.
Oh, really, Claudius? Who in his senses could suspect such evil? You might as well suspect the good goddess of poisoning the city wells.
You always loved and trusted Posthumus, didn't you?
Always.
And you really think that he could have tried to rape our sister?
Never.
So it follows there must have been a plot.
I agree. There's no other explanation.
Well then, let us go and see Livia and force the truth from her.
No, if we did, Livia would get to hear of it.
Ah, so you do believe that Livia arranged the whole thing? Will you go to Augustus?
Yes. It grieves me to say this, but I believe you're right, Claudius. I will tell Augustus all I suspect and force him to bring Posthumus back. I give you my word on it.
What happened at this interview, I do not know and never shall know, for Augustus, Posthumus, and Germanicus all died before I could sort out the facts.
But I do know that Augustus drew up a new order appointing Posthumus his successor. Not long after, he became ill, but cured himself by refusing all foods except green figs, which he picked from a tree with his own hands. And then he had a sudden relapse and died. The new order was mislaid. Posthumus was still in exile. Germanicus had taken up a new command, so Tiberius became emperor. Livia was heard to boast that he was receiving the monarchy as a gift from her hands. Posthumus escaped from his island, but was murdered when he landed at Ostia. Most sad of all, Germanicus died in mysterious circumstances in Antioch. Tiberius was 56 when he became emperor, and he was to rule for 22 years. Though he hated his mother Livia more than ever, he continued initially to allow her to rule him. I must make it plain that however criminal the means Livia used to win the direction of affairs for herself, firstly through Augustus and then through Tiberius, she was an exceptionally able and just ruler, and it was only when she ceased to direct the system that she had built up that it went wrong. A strong man was needed, and inevitably he appeared. Sejanus, captain of the guards. Tiberius was a naturally suspicious man who constantly feared plots against his life. Sejanus was one of the few men to whom he in any way opened up his mind. Slowly and with cunning, Sejanus built up his power by playing on Tiberius' suspicious nature, discovering for him a whole succession of plots and counterplots. With trials and executions going on all round me, I felt like a man living on the slopes of a volcano when it suddenly throws up a warning shower of ash and red-hot stones. As time passed and I grew older, I became less and less certain of my own safety. I looked around for ways to protect myself, and my search was noted with interest by the man who was now the second most important citizen of Rome. I had moved to a villa in Capua, feeling safer away from the city. One day, Sejanus paid me a visit there.
You don't live too lonely a life here by the look of things, Claudius. There's a woman about somewhere, I can see. Gloves, hand mirror, an embroidery frame.
I manage reasonably well, thank you, Sejanus.
A prostitute? It certainly isn't your wife.
I have been most fortunate. Calpurnia has been with me for several years. Ours is a business relationship, but it contains a great deal of affection, too.
Splendid. Then my clan will not interfere with your domesticity.
No?
Well, it's time you divorced Ergolinella and married again. It's years since you've lived together.
She was chosen for me by Livia, and I could not get a divorce without her consent.
Yet, Ergolinella is going to have a child in about 5 months' time.
You surprised me. She was never much interested in men.
You have me to thank for this.
Right?
No, not in the way you think. You remember her obsession about that girl, Numantia?
Oh, yes. She seemed to be the only person Ergolinella ever really cared for.
Until recently. I happened to see a young slave, a Greek, who might have been Numantia's male twin. I made Ergolinella a present of him. She fell in love with him at once.
Ah. But why should you do this for me? Who is my new wife to be?
I see you're not as simple as people say, Claudius. Not by a long chalk. I was coming to that. These are dangerous times in Rome, even for those who do not seek power.
Oh, I have never sought power.
These are still dangerous times.
Come to the point. Who do you suggest I marry?
My sister, by adoption.
Ilia?
The same. What do you say?
Well, what did she say? She is young and beautiful.
No, she won't mind in the least. She'll be marrying the nephew of Tiberius and the uncle of Nero. That's all she thinks about. And all I care about. Though I already have close connections with your family.
What do you mean?
Claudius, you really are an old stick in the mud. Have you seen Livilla recently?
Well, I keep away from my sister much as possible.
Pity, she's rather nice, really.
I don't feel it necessary to defend her honor.
Yes, I can understand that. Let me put it plainly, Claudius. I can protect you who have no interest in power all the more easily the more power I have.
But all I want is a quiet life in my library.
Well, you'll have that. Don't imagine that Elia's in love with you. She'll leave you alone. She might bring herself to sleep with you once to have a child for the sake of its ancestry, but as for any sentiment, I expect she has plenty of men friends. On the other hand, she won't be jealous of, what's her name?
Calpurnia.
In other words, a real Roman marriage. Well, what do you say?
From what I know of Elia, she can be rather critical.
She has a tongue like a sacking needle, if that's what you mean. Surely you're hardened against mere scolding.
I'm a little thin-skinned in places.
You don't sound very grateful.
It's not ingratitude, Sir Genius. You've taken great trouble on my account. I just don't know how to thank you properly.
Then write to Livia for her permission, and I'll see that your wedding is the event of the season.
I'd rather it were quiet, if you don't mind.
It'll be quiet, then, but why?
I don't like ceremonies. That's why I'm so grateful. I'll never be emperor.
I wouldn't worry about that if I were you.
Livia gave me permission to divorce Ergelinilla on condition that the expected child was exposed as soon as it was born. Ergelinilla has been dead many years now. In her will, she paid a curious tribute to me. I don't care what people say, Claudius is no fool. She left me a collection of Greek gems and a portrait of her friend, Numantia. Tiberius and Livia never met now. Tiberius moved to Capri, where he was able to indulge his more obscure and obscene vices in privacy, and Sejanus ruled Rome. In the last year of her life, when she was 86 and Tiberius had ruled for 11 years, Livia invited me to dinner. I was astounded, for she had always refused to have me at her table. Germanicus's son, my nephew Caligula, then aged 14, was the only other person present. I drank rather more than usual. In fact, the whole evening was like a drunken dream.
Grandmother, tell me why I'm dining here tonight.
If I have broken one of my oldest rules, that is my affair, not yours.
Well, dear, of course, I just wondered.
Do you dislike me, Claudius? Be frank.
Probably as much as you dislike me, Grandmother.
Thank you, now. Have you noticed that little monster there?
Hmm? Oh, do you mean the Nubian dwarf?
No, that nephew of yours.
Is he a monster?
Don't pretend you don't know it. You are a monster, aren't you, Caligula?
Whatever you say, great-grandmama.
Well, Claudius, that monster there, your 14-year-old nephew, is going to be the next emperor.
How do you know, grandmother?
You think I'm wrong? You think he won't stand a chance against Sir Janus and your sister Livilla?
I never concern myself with politics.
You don't have to worry about your strumpet sister. She and Sir Janus would dearly like to become emperor and empress. Her husband, Castor, is already out of the way murdered, I'm sure. But they still have to get rid of Drusus, Nero, and Caligula. They cannot succeed since Caligula is to be the next emperor.
Even as a prophecy, it seems rather a long shot.
Not a long shot at all. Tiberius will make him his successor, no question of it.
But why, Grandmother?
Oh, because Tiberius is like that. He has the same vanity as poor Augustus had. He can't bear the idea of a successor who will be more popular than himself. So when he feels his time is up, he'll search for someone just a little worse than himself to succeed him. And he'll find Caligula. There is one deed which Caligula has already done which puts him in a far higher rank of criminality than Tiberius can ever attain.
Please, great-grandmama.
All right, monster. Your secret's safe with me, so long as you behave.
Did he confess it voluntarily, grandmother?
Certainly not. He's not the confessing sort. I found it out by accident. I was searching his bedroom one night to see if he was trying any schoolboy tricks on me, whether he was doing any amateur black magic or distilling poisons or anything of that sort. I came across...
Please, great-grandmama.
A green object that told me a very remarkable story. But I gave it back to him.
Is it safe for poor Uncle Claudius to be told things, or are you going to poison him?
Mm. Oh, he's quite safe without poison. I want you two to know each other better than you do. That's one reason for this dinner. Your Uncle Claudius is a phenomenon, Caligula. He's so old-fashioned that because he's sworn an oath to love and protect his brother's children, you can impose on him as long as you live. Listen, Claudius.
Eh?
Your nephew Caligula is treacherous, cowardly, lustful, vain, deceitful, and he'll play you some very dirty tricks before he's done. But remember one thing, he'll never kill you.
Why is that?
Because you're the man who's going to avenge his death.
Poor Uncle Claudius. Who said so?
My soothsayer.
Does he never make mistakes?
Never. Run along, Caligula. Claudius and I will finish this conversation in private.
Good night, great-grandmama. Good night, Uncle Claudius.
Good night. More wine, grandmother.
Listen carefully, Claudius. Caligula is going to be murdered, and you're to avenge his death.
It seems a very odd conversation. Have I been drinking too much? Some jokes aren't safe nowadays. I hope the servants...
Don't worry, the servants are deaf mutes. And don't blame the wine, there's truth in wine.
If you really think him a monster, why encourage him? Why not give his elder brother your support? He's a fine fellow.
Maybe, but Caligula and not he will be the next emperor.
You make a very bad one if he's what you say he is. All I know about him is that he's always been dreadfully spoiled. My brother used to take him out on his campaigns. When he was only two, he became the troop's mascot.
Germanicus doted on him, more's the pity.
If you think he's so evil, why don't you fight against him?
You can't fight against fate. And now that Rome has been ungrateful and mad enough to allow my blackguardly son Tiberius to put me on the shelf and insult me. Me. Can you imagine it? Perhaps the greatest ruler that the world has ever known, and his mother too.
Please calm yourself, grandmother.
Oh, so I am to die, a disappointed old woman. Yet, I will be acknowledged the goddess many years after my death. My soothsayer has told me that someone who dies in the year I know I will die will become the greatest deity the world has ever known. And no temples in Rome or anywhere will be dedicated to anyone else. Not even to Augustus.
But why are you so anxious to become a goddess?
It is all I think about now that my work is over. If Augustus is a god, it's absurd for me to be merely his priestess. I did all the work, didn't I?
Did you?
Oh. He no more had it in him to be a great ruler than Tiberius had.
But isn't it enough for you to know what you have done without wanting to be worshipped by the ignorant rabble?
Fool. You do not understand. It is not my fame on earth that I'm thinking about. It is the position I am to occupy in heaven.
Why do you care so much?
To keep the empire free from factions, I've had to commit many crimes. Augustus nearly wrecked Rome with his ridiculous favoritism. Marcellus against Agrippa. Gaius against Tiberius. Lucius against Tiberius. Postumus. Who saved Rome from renewed civil war? I did. The unpleasant task of removing Marcellus and Gaius and the others fell on me. I kept the state on an even keel. And what is the proper reward for a ruler who commits such crimes for the sake of his subjects? The proper reward, obviously, is to be deified.
I do not understand why.
Oh, you are dim-witted. Do you believe that the souls of criminals are eternally tormented?
I have been taught to believe so.
And that the immortal gods are free from any fear of punishment?
Well, Jove deposed his father and killed one of his grandsons and incestuously married his sister. And yes, I agree, they, none of them have a very good moral reputation, and yet...
Exactly. You see now why it is all important for me to become a goddess. That is why I tolerate Caligula.
Why?
He has sworn that if I keep his secret, he will make me a goddess as soon as he is emperor. And I want you to swear that you will do all in your power to see if I become a goddess as soon as possible, because... Well, don't you see? Until he makes me a goddess, I'll be in hell suffering the most frightful torments, the most exquisite pain.
And I don't see what influence poor old Uncle Claudius will have over Caligula and the Senate if he does become the emperor.
Never mind what you see or you don't, you idiot. Swear.
I swear on one condition.
You dare to make conditions to me.
It's after the 20th cup. And it's a simple condition. I am a professional historian, and the one thing that really interests me is to find out how events happen and why. There are a lot of things I'd like to know about. Your crime is before I was born, Marcellus and the others don't really concern me, but my father, my brother, my friend...
Suppose I were guilty? Have you some imbecile plan for avenging their deaths on me?
Oh, I believe that evil is his own punishment. I'm content to leave it at that.
Very well. Go on.
Did you kill my father?
No. He died of a natural gangrene. But I had him marked down for death.
Why?
He wanted to restore the Republic. This republicanism is a persistent trait. Your grandfather had it, your father had it.
I have it. I think it is only fair to the emperor.
There's no use arguing with you, Republicans. You refuse to see that one can no more introduce republican government at this stage than one can reimpose primitive feelings of chastity on modern marriage. It can't be done. I never committed a murder which benefited me directly and immediately. I poisoned your grandfather.
My grandfather?
Oh, yes. But I didn't poison him until after I had divorced him and married Augustus. There was nothing personal in it.
Oh.
I poisoned him for republicanism, as I have just explained. The people I killed were those whose removal brought my sons and grandsons closer to the succession.
And Germanicus, my brother?
I did not kill Germanicus. Though I might have had to.
My first sweetheart, Camilla.
An unsuitable match. I hope you are grateful to me.
I am not, grandmother. I loved her.
You were a mere child, and she was the first girl who spoke to you. Any more questions?
Yes. Why did you murder or have banished so many of the descendants of Augustus?
Descendants? I had to murder Augustus himself. He was about to turn on me and give the crown to Posthumus.
But, Augustus, how? He only ate raw figs.
I had to smear poison on the figs while they were still on the tree.
I see. May I repeat my question?
Why did I put myself out to go to so much trouble?
Yes.
I never forgot for a moment whose daughter I was. Must I jog your memory, historian? My father was Claudian, and Augustus prescribed him after the Battle of Philippi. You know what he did then?
Yes, grandmother. He ran on his sword.
Yes. He killed himself rather than fall into Augustus' hands. Now, do you understand?
Yes, grandmother. I understand.
Good. Now perhaps you see why I must become a goddess.
May I ask one last question?
Just one.
Why did you never kill me?
Because until this evening you were the fool of the family. That's why.
I could never have thought it possible that I would miss my grandmother, Livia, when she died a few months later. But it soon became clear that it was only fear of his mother that had kept Tiberius within bounds. He returned from Capri. Now not even the trusted Sejanus was safe. He was executed and replaced as captain of the guard by another thug, Macro. Not only was Sejanus executed, but his children as well. His daughter of 14 was still a virgin. There was no precedent for executing a virgin, so Macro gave orders that the public executioner should outrage her, so as to avoid the ill luck that would befall the city should precedent be broken. As soon as I heard this, I said to myself, Rome, you are ruined. There can be no justification for a crime so horrible. I have reached a turning point in my story with the death of my grandmother Livia and the accession of my uncle Tiberius as emperor. I will not dwell upon Tiberius's reign because the least said about that dark period in our history, the better. When he was dying at the age of 78, his exit was speeded up by the application of a pillow held, some say, by his trusted captain of the guard, Macro, and some say by Caligula, who succeeded him as emperor at the age of 25. Caligula's accession was hailed with delight by the populace, with a bulging treasury, well-trained armies, an excellent administrative system, for in spite of Tiberius's neglect, the empire was still running fairly well under the impetus given it by Livia. With all these advantages, added to the legacy of love and confidence he enjoyed as the son of Germanicus, and the immense relief felt at the removal of Tiberius, what a splendid chance he had of being remembered in history as Caligula the Good. But this is idle talk. As my old tutor said, if the wooden horse of Troy had foaled, horses today would cost far less to feed. Early in his reign, I was pleasantly surprised when Caligula paid me 100,000 gold pieces owing to me from his side of the family. Calpurnia, the woman with whom I lived, knew more of the real world.
It won't bring you any luck, Claudius.
Why not, my dearest?
It would be better to be modestly well off as you have been than run the risk of having your whole fortune stripped from you.
I don't understand, Calpurnia.
You'd understand if you took your nose out of your books. I'm no politician or scholar, but I can at least use my prostitute's wit and do simple sums. How much money did the old emperor leave?
Oh, about 27 million gold pieces. That's a lot of money.
And how much has the new one paid out in legacies and bounties?
About 3.5 million.
And since he's been emperor, how many panthers and bears and lions and tigers and wild bulls has he imported for the huntsmen to kill in the amphitheatres?
About 20,000, I'm told.
And how many other animals have been sacrificed in the temples?
I don't know. I should guess between 100,000 and 200,000.
And what with buying all those animals and paying the huntsmen and the sword fighters get 4 times what they got under Augustus, I'm told. Oh, and they say that when he recalled the actors whom the old emperor banished, he paid them for all the years they were out of work. Huntsmen, eh? And the money he spent on racehorses. Well, what with one thing and another, he can't have much change left out of 20 million?
Not much, I would imagine.
Well, how is the money going to last at that rate?
Perhaps he'll be more economical after the first excitement of having money to spend. He got a good excuse for spending. He said that the stagnation of money under Tiberius had a most disastrous effect on trade. He wants to put a few million into circulation again.
You know him better than I do. Perhaps he'll know when to stop. But if he goes on at this rate, he won't have a penny left in a couple of years. And then who's going to pay?
Caligula fell ill, and for a whole month his life was despaired of. The doctors called it brain fever. While he was recovering, I was unexpectedly summoned to his bedchamber.
Late as usual, Claudius.
Oh, how I hurried. If I hadn't a lame leg, I'd have been here almost before I started. Can I dare to hope that you're better, Caesar?
I've never really been ill. Only resting.
Ah.
And undergoing a metamorphosis.
Oh.
It's the most important religious event in history.
Has it been painful, Emperor?
As painful as if I were my own mother. I had a very difficult delivery.
May I humbly inquire precisely what is the character of this glorious change that has come over you?
Isn't it immediately apparent?
Almighty.
That's better.
Am I the first privileged to worship you?
I am still in mortal disguise. So it is not remarkable that you did not notice my divinity at once.
I don't know how I could have been so blind. Your face shines in this dim light like a lamp.
Does it? That's nice. I always knew that it would happen. I never felt anything but divine. Think of it. At 2 years old, I put down a mutiny in my father's army in Germany, and so saved Rome. And what's more, by the age of 8, I had killed my father Germanicus. Jove himself never did that. He merely banished his father.
Why did you do that?
He tried to discipline me. Me, a young god. Just imagine it. He stood in the way of my godhead. I smuggled dead things into our house at Antioch. The corpse of a cat with wings growing from its back. The head of a negro with a child's hand protruding from its mouth. I hid them under the tiles. And I scrawled charms on the walls. And I got a cock in my bedroom to crow his marching orders. I frightened him to death. He thought it was witchcraft. And I robbed him of his green jasper charm. Hecate, look, here she is. I always keep her under my pillow.
You were the one, then.
Not only did I kill my natural father, but I killed my father by adoption, too. Tiberius. Mind you, he was not long for this world, but it was time he left it. And whereas Jupiter only lay with one sister of his, I have lain with all 3 of mine. Drusilla,
Agrippinilla and Lesbia, I'll tell you another thing. Drusilla's divine, too. I'm going to announce it at the same time as I make the announcement about myself. How I love Drusilla. Almost as much as she loves me.
May I ask what your sacred intentions are?
Certainly you may ask. First, I'm going to put the whole world in awe of me.
That's only justice. But what I am anxious to know at once is this. In what name am I to adore you? Is it correct, for instance, to call you Jove? Are you not greater than Jove?
Greater than Jove, certainly, but anonymous as yet. You remember my great-grandmother, Livia?
Very well indeed.
A clever and capable woman in her way. A sort of female Ulysses. Well, she got the notion that it was she who was to be the everlasting god about whom everybody has been prophesying in the East for 1,000 years. But she didn't know the precise terms of the prophecy. The god is to be a man, not a woman, and not born in Rome, though he is to reign in Rome after his death. Many prodigies have been seen in the Near East, which prove conclusively that the god has been born at last. The Jews are the most excited. They somehow feel themselves peculiarly concerned. I suppose that this was because I once visited their city of Jerusalem, for it can only be myself.
Of course. All that puzzles me is that your father wasn't a god, too. I've never heard of a god without a divine father.
That's simple. The god Augustus was my father.
But he never adopted you, did he?
I don't mean that he was my father by adoption. I mean that I am his son by his incest with his daughter Julia. I must be. It's the only solution.
This is the most glorious hour of my life. Allow me to return to sacrifice to you at once with my remaining strength. The divine air you exhale is too strong for my mortal nostrils. I am nearly faint.
I had thought of killing you, but I won't. Go in peace.
Caligula's divinity, would you believe it, was hailed with delight. It seems that people want a god, and if there's one that they can see, it is even more satisfying. His follies and extravagances knew no bounds. Even his favorite horse, Incitatus, was made first a citizen and then a senator. He was given a house and servants. He had a marble bedroom with a straw mat for a bed, an ivory manger, a gold bucket to drink from, and pictures by famous artists on the walls. The populace were as yet undisturbed, so lavish were Caligula's entertainments. But the old Roman families suffered in silence, especially those who prided themselves on the ancient virtues. You will have noticed that my mother has played very little part in my life story, and in fact we hardly saw each other. The crimes of Caligula brought us together, however, for a short period, and very late in the day.
I am about to kill myself, Claudius. I have come to say goodbye.
Mother, what is this, kill yourself?
My life's my own, isn't it? Why should you dissuade me from taking it? Surely you won't miss me, will you?
You are my mother. Man has only one mother.
I'm surprised that you speak so dutifully. I've been no very loving mother to you. How could I have been expected to be so? You are always a great disappointment to me, a sick, feeble, timorous, woolly-willed thing.
Yes, Mother.
I have been prettily punished by the gods for my neglect of you. My splendid son Germanicus murdered. My daughter Livilla a whore and a murderess. My four granddaughters all gone to the bad, and now this filthy, impious Caligula. Well, you've survived them all, and you'll survive him. You'd survive a universal flood.
Oh, Mother, I'm sorry.
I have been prettily punished, I repeat. I wish you to come to my house in 5 hours' time. By then I shall have completed my arrangements. I count on you to pay me the last rites.
Yes, Mother, you can count on me.
I don't want you to catch my dying breath. If I am not dead when you arrive, wait in the anteroom until you get the word from my maid.
Yeah, but could
don't I make a muddle of the valedictory. That would be just like you. You are to be the chief mourner.
Yes, Mother.
You'll find my affairs in order. There will be a few small deaths outstanding. Pay them punctually.
Mother,
no, Claudius, no kiss, no tears, no blessing. And just for once in your life, try to carry one ceremony through without a mistake.
Yes, my mother, I'll try.
And as a dutiful son, I carried out her last wishes to the letter. Caligula was now beginning to be unpopular with the people. That the crowd always likes a holiday is a common saying, but when the whole year becomes one long holiday and nobody has time for attending to his business and pleasure becomes compulsory, then it is a different matter. His extravagances continued.
How much is left in the privy purse now, Claudius?
Less than 5 million, I believe. Caligula's been building pleasure barges of cedar wood and overlaying them with gold and studding them with jewels. And he started work on 60 new temples and talks of cutting a canal across the Isthmus of Corinth. 2 days ago, he gave a charioteer of the Green Team a present of 20,000 in gold for winning a close race.
Does the Green Team always win?
Always. Or almost always. Scarlet happened to come in first the other day, and the people gave a great cheer. They were tiring of the monotony of green victory. The Emperor was furious. Next day, the Scarlet charioteer and his winning team were all dead. Poisoned. Same sort of things happened before.
Well, you're safe enough, Claudius, my dear.
Are you sure?
Are you badly treated?
They make a fool of me all the time. I don't like that. The Emperor is my chief tormentor.
What do they do to you?
Oh, practical jokes, booby traps with buckets of water suspended over doors and frogs in my bed. If I happen to take a nap after my dinner, they flip date stones at me or ring the fire bell in my ears. And I never get time to do any work. If I make a start, they upset my ink pot all over it. And nothing that I say is ever treated seriously.
Are you the only buck they have?
The favorite one. The official one.
Claudius, you're luckier than you realize. Guard your appointment jealously. Don't let anyone usurp it.
What do you mean, girl?
I mean that people do not kill their butts. They are cruel to them. They frighten them. They rob them. But they don't kill them.
Capone, you're very clever. Listen to me, my dear. I must tell you why I asked you to come here this evening.
I wondered what it would be. Not one of my usual nights.
Last night I was called to the palace. Caligula had organized a theatrical show. You know how he loves dressing up. He came on the stage in a woman's pink gown with a crown of imitation roses on his head and approached the bed and pulled out a naked girl and a naked man. He led the girl over to me and said, "Pretty, isn't she, Claudius, you old lecher? It's time you had a new wife. Would you like to marry her? She's too thin for me. Would you like to marry her?" he said to me.
And you had to say yes?
As much as my life was worth.
Very well, my dear. I'll go back to the farm and look after things for you there. You can visit me.
Calpurnia.
What is your name?
Messalina.
Messalina? You're lucky she's not 15.
Sempronia, you are more intelligent and loyal and kind-hearted and straightforward than any of the noble women I have married.
I wish you luck with Messalina, Claudius. If ever you need me, I shall be at the farm.
I know you will, my dearest. I know you will be there to help. You are my truest friend.
Oh, get on with you. You won't miss me with that pretty wife of yours.
I will. You know I will. Messalina was an extremely beautiful girl. Slim and quick-moving, with eyes as black as jet and masses of curly black hair. She was so glad to have escaped from Caligula that she behaved towards me in a way which made me quite sure that she loved me as much as I loved her. This was the first time I had been in love with anyone since Camilla during my boyhood. And when a not very clever, not very attractive man of 50 falls in love with a very attractive and very clever girl of 15, it is usually a poor lookout for him. After our marriage, Messalina and I were invited to live in the palace again. We arrived at an unfortunate time. Rome had reached rock bottom, as Calpurnia had foreseen. In under 4 years, Caligula had drained the treasury and the privy purse completely dry. His methods of raising money were unpopular, although ingenious. A series of taxes, fines, and confiscations. He even took to gambling with wealthy visitors to the city, playing always with loaded dice and so always winning. He ran an exclusive and exquisite brothel at the palace, with entertainments to suit all tastes. Admission, 1,000 gold pieces. It could not last. The plot was formed by one Cassius Curia. He was an old-fashioned soldier, accustomed to blind obedience to the orders of his superiors. Things had to be extraordinarily bad before a man of this stamp can think of plotting against the life of his commander-in-chief. Caligula had treated Cassius badly. He had promised him the command of the guards, and then, without a word of warning, had given it to a captain of no military distinction as a reward for a remarkable drinking feat at the palace. He pretended that Cassius was an effeminate old peasant and was always making dirty jokes about him. Cassius used to come to Caligula for the watchword every day. It had always been Rome or Augustus or Jove, but now, to annoy him, Caligula would give him absurd words like stay laces or lots of love or curling irons or kiss me, sergeant. Cassius had to take them back to his brother officers and stand their tough. He and a group of co-conspirators decided to kill Caligula at lunchtime on the first day of the great Palatine festival. Caligula had been angry with the people lately for their lack of enthusiasm for his latest wild bear show. He had punished them by shutting the city granaries for 10 days. But perhaps he had now forgiven them because, after sacrificing to Augustus in a somewhat perfunctory and distasteful way, he proclaimed,
"If any citizen present asks the boon that it is in my power to grant, I will generously grant it."
How dare they? Guards, go down and chop off 100 heads. That ought to teach them to spurn the gifts of a god.
By this time, there can hardly have been a citizen of Rome who did not long for Caligula's death. Only his devoted German guard protected him from 1,000 assassins' hands. Apart from these Germans and Caligula himself, about the only person in Rome who had not heard of Cassius' plot was poor Claudius. After the summary executions, the festival proceeded with a specially chosen play, The Tyrant's Death, followed by acrobats. It neared lunchtime, and I began to feel hungry. Caligula did not seem disposed to eat. Eventually, a messenger arrived for him.
Caesar, the boys from Asia Minor have arrived.
The shore dancers, oh, splendid. They'll be able to perform for us this afternoon. I must see them at once and have a short rehearsal. Come, friends, the rehearsal first, then a bath and back again.
I went ahead to the palace, and so was not present when Caligula was stopped at the gate by Cassius.
Today's watchword, Caesar.
Eh? Oh, yes, the watchword, Cassius. I'll give you a nice one today. Old man's petticoat.
No, Cassius! No! Again! Oh, Jude!
Haunted!
The news quickly reached the palace that Caligula had been hacked to pieces. The palace guard was in confusion and did not know whether to avenge him or rejoice. I hid behind a curtain as they went looting from room to room while pretending to seek the assassin.
Kill them! Kill them! Avenge Caesar!
Two soldiers entered the room where I was hiding. They saw my feet under the curtain.
Come out there, assassin! He's hiding from us!
Don't kill me, Lord. I had nothing to do with it.
He couldn't kill a fly.
Who is the old gentleman?
He doesn't look dangerous.
No.
I know him. He's the invalid brother of Germanicus.
A decent old stick, by all accounts.
There's no harm in him, no harm at all.
No,
get up, so we won't hurt you.
I'm a republican.
Republican? A new emperor's our only hope. Any old emperor.
We want someone immediately to keep the city quiet, otherwise they'll run amok.
Who did you say his name was?
He's the brother of Germanicus.
I know old Claudius.
Hey, Sergeant.
Yeah?
Look who we've got here. Bit of luck, I think. What's wrong with old Claudius for a
job? No, I'm not.
He does really good stammer
about it.
We thought you were dead, sir. But you're our man, all right.
Come on.
Push him up. Don't. Well, we can all see him. Long live the emperor.
Put me down. Put me down, I say. I don't want to be emperor. I refuse to be emperor. Long live the republic.
He doesn't want to be emperor, he says, yeah. Modest.
Give me a sword, I'll kill myself sooner. Messalina, leave here, leave at once.
Claudius, for my sake, Claudius, do what they're asking you. I'm pregnant, for our child's sake. We'll all be murdered if you refuse.
Long live the Emperor Claudius!
Claudius! Claudius! Claudius! Claudius! Claudius!
For your sake, Messalina. For your sake.
You'll be all right, sir, once you get accustomed to it. It's not such a bad life. The Empress isn't.
Claudius! 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 Claudius!
They forced me to put on Caligula's golden oak leaf chaplet recovered from one of the looters. It kept slipping over one ear. I was carried round and round the court on their shoulders. To steady myself, I had to cling tightly to their neck. They say that I looked like a criminal on my way to execution. Messalina was smiling and waving. And what thoughts or memories would you guess were passing through my mind on this extraordinary occasion? Was I thinking of the Sibyl's prophecy? Of my father and liberty? Of my three imperial predecessors, Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula, their lives and deaths? Of Messalina and our unborn child? Of my grandmother Livia and my promise to deify her? Of Postumus and Germanicus? Of my first sweetheart, Camilla? No, You would never guess what was passing through my mind, but I shall be frank and tell you what it was, although the confession is a shameful one. I was thinking of my meeting in the library with Pollio, the last of the Romans. And I was thinking, so, I'm emperor, am I? What nonsense. But at least I'll be able to make people read my books now. Public recitals to large audiences. My history of Carthage is full of amusing anecdotes. I'm sure they'll enjoy it. And I'll be able to consult the secret archives and find out exactly what happened on this occasion or that. What a miraculous fate for an historian. But as the masked trumpeters blew the imperial salute, all such thoughts were blown out of my head.
Timothy West played Claudius in I, Claudius by Robert Graves, with Mary Morris as Livia, Francis Jeter as Calpurnia, David Lerner as Caligula, and Mel Martin as Messalina. The Sibyl was played by Tessa Worsley, Livy Lockwood West, young Claudius Andrew Downer, Pollio David Garth, Germanicus Graham Blocky, Camilla Verity Ann Meldrum, Augustus Gerard Green, Medulinus Arnold Diamond, Posthumus Jamie Roberts, Sejanus Geoffrey Collins, Claudius's mother Mary Wimbush, Cassius Alan Thompson, and the sergeant Colin Starkey. The radio version of I, Claudius was by Eric Ewens, adapted and directed by Glyn Dearman.